Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Rachel.
What's on your mind today?
Well, the first thing that's on my mind is that we're doing the show on Instagram Live today for the first time. So I'm a hair bit distracted trying to be cool and hip. But I'll just show you, here's where we are. And there's where my guest is. I don't even know if I can show him. We'll get the surprise guest. The surprise guest will be on soon. So if you want to join us and kind of see what we do, we're on Instagram Live, The Reluctant Therapist. So that feels pretty hip and cool. And my guest is the perfect person to do hip and cool things with. But I want to start off by saying that I'm not a very social person, you know, which might surprise you because my jobs are very social jobs, being a professor and doing a radio show. But I'm pretty introverted and I'm not super social. So with the pandemic, I haven't missed restaurants and I haven't missed gatherings with friends. And I mean, I miss my friends, but I don't miss the parties and small talk. And, you know, I don't miss going to bars because I never did that. And there's just, I have settled in very nicely to my quarantined life, but I've really missed live music and I've really missed live theater because not only have I enjoyed introducing my daughters to theater and I was in theater when I was a kid, but one of my favorite things to do is to sneak into a show right as it starts, get that seat in the back of the theater, sit in the dark by myself and just allow the show to take me. And I have had many amazing evenings at PCPA Theater Fest in Santa Maria, where I've snuck in at the last minute and watched some amazing transformative theater experiences. And I miss that. And I miss it because along the way in my life, my daughter Kelly, and you might not know this about me because we haven't chatted about it, but my daughter Kelly was a performer. She would say was, I would say is, but she would say was. And in the process of her growing up, she was able to be in some productions at PCPA. So that made the whole experience of going to shows there even more fun because throughout the years of her being a part of it, we got to know some of the performers and resident artists, and they've become dear friends and part of our life. So I just miss that world. I miss the conversations I have with people who are in the theater because there's something amazing about conversations with people who are in the arts because they see the world through such a different lens. I miss that. I miss going to shows and having my mind expanded or having a transcendent experience, hearing someone sing a song that I can't believe they're able to do the things they do. And I would love to start name dropping, but then I would leave someone out and I'd feel really sad, but I miss PCPA. So in the last week or so, I've been chatting with my daughter, Kelly, and as we do, we talk about all the things we miss and how much she loved being a part of the performances and a part of the productions. And I said, you know who has never been on my show in the 10 years I've been doing this is Eric Stein. And Eric Stein is a legend on the Central Coast. I just say his name, and I can tell you in all honesty, I've had more responses to Eric being on the show than almost any interview I've done in 10 years. And so that says a lot about who he is, kind of the myth and the legend. And he's very tall. So I think that also helps him to stand out in the world. But before I bring Eric in, I want to say this. Because my daughter was involved in the theater world here on the Central Coast, and the theater world in the Central Coast is brutal for young performers. This is the place that spawned Harry Shum of Glee fame and that other kid, you remember who he is? Zac Efron. Anyway, it's a pretty brutal experience. And Kelly learned a lot very quickly about auditioning and getting roles and not getting roles and how people behaved who are in productions. And I will say that Eric Stein has been the most loving, supportive, kind human throughout my entire experience with Kelly doing this work, with other people I've known who have worked with him, and my own experience of running into Eric at different times, which is usually after he's performed and he's sweaty and tired, and he still takes the time to say hello and be excited that you've shown up. my first experience at PCPA was taking my daughter Kirsten to see The Wizard of Oz in 1991. And when the witch flew across the theater, I thought she would fall out of her chair. She could hardly believe it. And then the next big performance was taking Kelly and my whole family to see Fiddler on the Roof. And I think that was in 2004, right around there. And that was transformative, and it's still a family favorite. And then last year, not this December, but the December before, I got to take my granddaughter to see The Little Mermaid. And Eric Stein was King Triton at that show. And he bent over, told my granddaughter hello, and it changed her life. So it is my pleasure to spend this hour with Eric Stein, not just making him feel embarrassed for all of his amazing attributes, but also to talk about how everyone is missing theater and how he is missing theater and what it might look like moving forward into the next months or years, and how will we be able to ever gather together again, and what will that look like? So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. As I mentioned before, if you want to jump on our Instagram, The Reluctant Therapist, we're live in the moment, and I will be picking up the phone and showing you who my guest is as we're doing this show. You can also follow us on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can always podcast our show as well. And so, although we are not opening the phones, you can drop a question into the Instagram Live, or you can also give us a call at 805-549-8855. And Rachel will correct me if I got that wrong. Excellent. All right. So thank you for joining us today. We will take a quick break, listen to a little bit from Shrek, the musical, and be back to start my conversation with Eric Stein. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
With happiness all around, it's peaches and cream if our dream comes true. It's a big, bright, beautiful world with possibilities everywhere. If true love is blind, maybe you won't mind the view. I know I'm not the handsome prince for whom you've waited. I don't have a fancy castle and I'm not sophisticated. A princess and an ogre, I admit, is complicated. You've never read a book like this, but fairy tales should really be updated. It's a big, bright, beautiful world.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the reluctant therapist. And I am joined today by my guest, Eric Stein, who is formerly known as the casting director at PCPA. I think he's also considered a resident artist for the company. He is the author of the book, No Caution, a step-by-step guide to preparing for auditions in colleges and universities. And we're definitely going to talk about that. But one of the big awards that just came up just in the last few days was posted was that Broadway World's 2020 Regional Awards named Eric Stein Performer of the Decade for his work as Shrek in the 2016 musical at PCPA. So I am in the presence of greatness on so many levels, but congratulations, Eric, for that award. Does it make you, how does it make you feel? I guess is a better question.
Wow. You know, thanks so much for having me. This is just an incredible joy. I listen to your show so often on this, my very favorite radio station. So it's just a real thrill to get to be a part of this show that I listen to. And I'm a little bit starstruck. And so oh my gosh, to get this award it's just incredible. I don't even know really how else to say it. It's just unbelievably flattering. It's a regional award, which is really lovely. So it's really for the Central Coast Santa Barbara region. But the name Broadway World sure sounds fancy. So, so that's pretty cool. I think one of the things that is so much the case when we work in theater is it takes so much to make a performance happen that it seems inappropriate for me to accept this by myself. You know, Brad Carroll is the guy who really got the performance out of me that seemed to catch people's attention, really took me places that I hadn't been as an actor before. The role of Shrek is a really interesting role that I so loved getting to play because guys who look like me don't normally get to play the romantic lead, you know, 6'6", bald, a little heavier than I should be, you know. In my late 40s, to get asked to play the hero of the story who falls in love with the princess, that was a new thing for me. And Brad really helped me find the way in there. And then, I mean, just the technical side, my gosh, all of the makeup, Robin Newell's work with all of the makeup, and Eddie Barrow's work with my costume, Michael Jenkinson's work with the choreography, and then obviously the person who I got to star opposite, Karen Hendricks. So I'm like, it's just pretty awesome. I don't really know. I try to be like, play it down and be like, oh, you know, whatever. But I was like, it says performer of the decade. I feel like I should retire. You know, I was like, what comes after that?
That's what I was going to ask, because it was almost as if you killed theater by winning the award, because we don't have anything happening right now. So we just get to think back to all the amazing accomplishments. But how, so do you keep a chart? Like, is there a garage door where you mark all the shows you've done? Like, how many productions have you been in? Do you have a running?
Yeah, I'm reaching for my journal, because I have one journal here devoted to all of the shows that I've done. I don't know if for the Instagram live people, but yeah, I just have just a list of shows that just goes on and on and on here in this little journal, so that I can, you know, look back and go, oh my gosh, I did that show when I was 22 for 6 weeks at a theater in Omaha. I forgot, you know, and as I get older, I really start to forget things. So I turned 50 in May. So I don't know if I'm forgetting stuff now, what's going to happen in 15 years. So I need to write it all down, because it is, they're kind of like tattoos, I guess. If I look at it in my journal and I see the title and the theater company, I immediately get pulled right back to those memories and that time.
All right, so let's just do a little history, because I think people who follow PCPA or any theater on the Central Coast, because there's a period of time that you and your wife Jackie had your own theater company, and you've been in other companies in the Central Coast. But let's start, like, why did you even start down this path? What's your theater history, your performer history? Did you start when you were 9?
Yeah. You know, I started around 12, 13. A lot of it goes to my sister. My sister is 6 years older than me. She was off. She was off in college at Stanford, which, you know, was really fancy. And I was an okay student, but not great. My sister and brother were both salutatorian. I think that's like second in their class, you know, and both really, really great students. My brother went to Berkeley. My sister went to Stanford. I was just an okay student, nothing too fancy. My brother was quite the athlete. My sister was quite the athlete. I was just okay. I wasn't anything to get excited about. I made the team, but I was on second string, you know. And so I really didn't have anything that I was overly excited about or that I was excelling at. And other than I watched TV really, really well. I loved watching television and I watched it well and often. And a girl that I had a crush on was at the community theater taking after school classes like they have at SLO Rep, the after school classes at SLO, even though SLO is a professional company. And my sister told my mom that she needed to enroll me in those classes so that I would do something after school other than watch TV. And I was into it because this girl I had a crush on. her name was Merritt. Her name is Merritt. was there. Merritt lasted about 6 months. I stayed forever. So and I got involved in the community theater. I had an amazing community theater teacher named Sandra Dinsey, who really changed my life. Once I got into high school, by my junior year, I joined the drama program in my junior year in high school. And an amazing man named Leslie Henshaw, who also very much changed my life, was the drama teacher there.
Where'd you go to high school? Where was
this was in Merced, California. And Leslie is a 6'6" tall gentleman who was about 10 years older than me. And to have another kind of freakishly tall guy say, hey, you can do this. And both Sandra and Leslie encouraged me to look at PCPA as a place to train. So I actually trained in the conservatory program at PCPA from 1988 to 1990. And, you know, I could go on and on. I don't want to bore you all with my journeys across the country. But the thing that I think is so interesting is that in 88, when I was training from 88 to 90, my teachers were the resident actors in the company. And I just thought, that's the goal. That's the best job ever, that these folks have. They work for an amazing theater company, and they do a wide variety of different types of shows. The season is selected for them. And that became the goal. And what was interesting is I didn't really want to go to a normal four-year college. And the only way I could think of getting PCPA to take me seriously enough to let me be in the resident company was if I got a Broadway credit. So my whole motivation behind going across the country, doing, you know, national tours and working with summer stock and dinner theater and regional theater, and then to finally get to New York, was to try to create a resume that would be impressive enough that PCPA would someday hire me to be a resident actor.
And how long did that take then? Because you did get your Broadway moment. And mm-hmm. What year was that? Which show?
It was great. I got the Broadway production of A Christmas Carol, which was a really great job to get because it was it came back every year. So mm-hmm. we would play at Madison Square Garden every year. And it was a 10-year run in which I got to join about 6 years in and do 4 years. So I was with the show for four holiday seasons and got to work with some really cool people like Tim Curry and Frank Langella, and the director is the amazing Susan Stroman. Paul Gimignani was the musical director. It was just an incredible experience. I got to do that from 96 to 2000. Well, no, sorry, 97 to 2002-ish. And that was really cool. And then I pretty much came back to the Central Coast after that ended. And I just was a pest to PCPA from 2002 until for 7 years. They finally brought me into the company full time in 2009.
So they figured they couldn't avoid you because you're 6'6".
Yeah, I was just an unbelievable annoyance that was going to be there whether they wanted me there or not. And so they finally found a place for me.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Eric Stein, casting director and resident artist with PCPA Theater Fest. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And Rachel, I think we have a call for Eric.
We do. A caller wanted to mention that the PCPA volunteers really miss the theater. And she says her 85-year-old mother, Eileen, misses going in once a week to usher.
Oh, thank you. I think that was Odine because I've seen her mom there. And we'll come back to the career, but let's talk a little bit about how many people are missing.
Yeah. Well, let me just say we miss them and all of everyone so very much. You know, it just makes us feel good to hear people say they miss us, but I hope they understand how much we miss them. There's a difference doing live theater than doing film or television. And the difference is them, the audience, the people actually there in the building with us, giving us immediate response to what we're doing. We're breathing the same air. We are laughing together. We are breathing together. And there are studies that show that people in a room listening to music or watching theater together, their hearts actually start to beat in sync. And so I miss our hearts beating together. So the whole aspect of live theater is that it's a shared experience. So it's, I don't know if I have the words to let folks know how much we miss them, and can't wait until we can all be in the same room together again.
Well, and I think that the mental health piece of it is really profound. It's one of the reasons that I invited you to come in and do the show is because there are proven mental health benefits to gathering and sharing, having a shared experience, whether it's, you know, watching a play or listening to music. And so when we think of the things that we miss or what the pandemic has taken away, I think that stabilizing experience of a shared moment is so important. And I don't want to jump too far off because I want to make you talk a little bit more about your career and when you met your beautiful wife, Jackie, because you waited a while to get back to PCPA. And in that interim, you started your own theater company right here on the Central Coast, right? The Cabaret.
Yeah. The California Cabaret Theater. Yeah. So I met my wife. I graduated from PCPA and I was really lucky. I immediately got hired at the Great American Melodrama. And so I worked for almost a year, about 11 months after I finished PCPA, I worked at the Melodrama. And on my very first day at the Melodrama, I met my beautiful wife, Jackie. We were the two new company members, coming into the show. Just couldn't speak. She floored me. She's so beautiful and was way, way, way out of my league. As I want to do, I just stuck around, finally she was like, all right, well, actually she asked me out, 'cause I was too shy. She finally asked me out. I was just too shy. She was way out of my league. But, so we worked together at the Melodrama and then started to work our way across the country and worked in summer stock theaters and dinner theaters and small regional theaters and things like that. But once we finally made our way to New York City and had the big New York adventure, which was really exciting, we were there for 6 years and Jackie did the first national tour of Sunday in the Park with George. And I got to work I got to do the Broadway show and I got to do a really cool show off Broadway with Manhattan Theater Club. And we got to do some really fancy stuff, but we really found that we're just not really big city people. And the roller coaster, I basically found with that the peaks were not worth the valleys in New York. I wrote in my journal one day that occasional elation. No. How did I write this? Oh my gosh, I can't remember now. It's been kind of a mantra for me. Oh yeah, here it is. Daily happiness far outweighs occasional elation. Mm-hmm. And that was what we were looking for when we decided to leave New York, was daily happiness as opposed to that occasional elation. And so we decided we wanted to live where we wanted to live and then see if we could make work happen. We got back involved with PCPA and PCPA would bring us in as guests. We got back involved with the Melodrama. The Melodrama would hire us to write and direct and things like that. Jackie was still doing shows there as well. Started working with what was then the Little Theater, which is now Slow Rep. And I'd always dreamed of opening. We've always thought how great it would be to open our own theater. You know, a lot of actors sit around and talk about, oh, you know, I should mount my own show or I should do this. And you know, a lot of times it's because we're complaining. We're saying, man, they should do it this way or it should be done that way. Why aren't they doing it this way? I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be the guy who just sat around and stood in the back and complained. I wanted to actually try to put some of my ideas in action. So we started working with a theater company up in Alaska when we did some while we were working for this dinner theater in Alaska, we started a Shakespeare company that performed at midnight outside in the summer because it's daylight all the time. And your daughter, Kelly, knows this. I know she spends a lot of time up in Alaska. And so we would perform at midnight on the tundra, Shakespeare's plays like Midsummer Night's Dream and Taming of the Shrew and things like, we even did Macbeth. It was very exciting. And we fell in love with that. And so decided that we were going to try to open something here on the Central Coast. And for 3 years with some really good friends, we ran the California Cabaret Theater in Avila. And it was great. We had a lot of success and we probably would still be doing it. But we got this great opportunity with PCPA that was something that had been a lifelong dream. So we went ahead and let the California Cabaret Theater go to pursue the full-time position with PCPA.
And so I doubt that you would answer in any other way, but is being back at PCPA these years, do you feel you've arrived to the place you'd hope to be in? And is it what you'd hoped it would be?
Yeah. You know, I think that what's great is, you know, sometimes your life goes in stages. And so I feel like things came into my life at the right time. I think my 20s were a really great time to be nomadic and just travel all over the country. You know, I have performed in 40 of the 50 states. My wife Jackie's performed in 49 of the 50 states. Hawaii's the only one she's not performed in, and she's trying to claim that she did the hula when she was 8. And I said that doesn't count because she didn't get paid. But she has been paid to act in, you know, in 40. I've been paid in 40 of the 50 states. So that nomadic lifestyle was really exciting and a wonderful adventure through our 20s. But when we got into our 30s, we were looking to settle down and make a home. That's when we started with the idea of running our own company, which was really nice. And then as I got interested in starting to maybe share some of my life experience with younger actors, PCPA came into my life where not only are we resident actors in the company, we teach in the conservatory. And that seemed to come into my life at a really good time. I had the great fortune while we were running our theater company in our during our early 30s, I got involved with Robin Metchik's high school drama program and really found a love for directing and working with young actors. And so Robin really provided kind of a laboratory for Jackie and I to just experiment and figure out how do you do this and how do you pull work out of young actors. And that has been so helpful, and it really ignited a spark in me wanting to do more of that. And that's when PCPA came into my life. So it's going to be interesting to see what's next. You know what? I think about that a lot now that I've turned 50. What is my act two? You know, what's act two going to be?
Well, and that's a perfect kind of turning point, because I do want to shift and talk about what is going to be the future of theater. And I want to talk about your book. My guest today is Eric Stein. He is the casting director at PCPA Theater Fest. He is also a resident artist. He is the author of No Caution, a step-by-step guide to preparing for auditions. He was recently awarded Performer of the Decade, a lofty title, by Broadway World's 2020 Regional Awards for his performance as Shrek in 2016. I am honored to have Eric on the show with us today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I've gotten through. Hey, lady, aren't you hoosers? Wow, what a looker you were. Or better yet, sorry, Jesus, I thought you were hoosers. Whatever happened to her? Good times and bum times. I've seen them all, my dear. Still here. Plush velvet sometimes. Sometimes just pretzels and beer. I have run the gamut. A to Z. Three chairs, damn it. Say of me, I got through all of last year, and I'm here. Christ knows, at least I was there, and I'm here. Luck goes here. I'm still here. Yes.
This is listener-supported Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Thanks for tuning in for this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. If you have questions you want to have answered, call them in at 805-549-8855. Elizabeth, back to you.
Thank you so much, Rachel. And you can also join us on our Instagram Live. So far, so good. I haven't shut down the whole station, but just look for the Reluctant Therapist on Instagram, and you can see me, and you can see my friend Eric Stein, and you can see Rachel in the studio. So jump in. And if you have a question, you can ask us through the Instagram Live as well. All right. So let's jump a little bit over to the topic of the day, which is, where is theater today? And what are the preparations you're making as professionals to keep it going? Because we did watch your Christmas special. We bought tickets and were part of that experience, which was wonderful, but it just made me miss you more. And I wanted to hug you all. And so what's the plan?
Well, you know, it's still up in the air, but we will be back. You know, it was the great thing. It's hard for me to tell you exactly or really even outline a clear plan right now, because so much depends on getting the COVID numbers down. And once we start to see those numbers go down, and once we get below a certain level, we can really start to really feel like, okay, this is going to happen. I would love to say that, well, let me just say it this way. We are planning and hoping to be able to do something outdoors in the Solvang Festival Theater this summer. Probably something small and probably in the opening sometime in the month of August. Is that going to happen for sure? Oh my gosh, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. But it seems like it could. There's a possibility, but there are a lot of factors. There's obviously we want to follow the guidelines of the health department in Santa Barbara County and follow the guidelines from the Biden administration. And we need to follow, we're required to follow the guidelines that come from the Actors Union, Actors Equity as well. And so we just have a lot of things that we have to manage before we know for sure that we can come back. We're also feeling really good about the likelihood of us starting the conservatory again in late August. That's feeling even more possible. So that's a long way for me saying, I'm not exactly sure when we'll be back, but we will be back. I think other theaters might even be able to come back sooner. You know, the Melodrama is slow rep. They might be able to come back sooner. They're a little bit, they are just by nature smaller companies. And it's a little easier when you don't have quite as many people to manage. So we're hopeful for those companies to be able to open up as soon as possible as well.
Is the issue, though, because I can understand we can distance people pretty easily, especially in Solvang, sitting people apart. Is it, though, the actors working together in close proximity, is that the bigger issue right now?
From what I understand, it's not necessarily the area that I'm most informed in. We have an amazing production manager, Jeff Allen, who is really managing all of that with our production stage manager, Laura Danick. But from what I understand, there's obviously, we want to keep our audiences safe, trying to figure out how do you get them in the building, into seats, up and down aisles, to and from the restroom, all of that stuff. We got to figure that out. But the other thing that is really interesting that kind of caught me off guard is if we start rehearsal for a show, mm-hmm. and we've got, 10 actors in a show and a couple of stage managers and some folks building the set and building the costumes and things like that, and one person in that mix tests positive, the whole production has to shut down and quarantine for 10-ish days. And that just doesn't really fit the live producing model. That we rehearse for 4 weeks, we open the show. If we all of a sudden in the middle of rehearsal lose 10 days of rehearsal, then the opening date gets pushed back, and then we open the show, but then somebody tests positive, and then we have to shut the show down. And all these people who already had tickets and things like that. So we have to get to a place where it is likely that no one involved in the production is going to test positive, so that we can keep the train moving forward and meet all the the guidelines. Now, that's if we continue to produce the way we've produced in the past. Maybe we'll come up with a new model where it's a little bit more flexible, you know, and
like a pop-up shop.
Yeah, exactly.
Meet us downtown.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where we are right now as far as of what we know about when we'll be back. What I'd like to say again is we will be back because theater survives. You know, the arts survive. Theater made it through the plague. We're going to make it through this. Shakespeare wrote King Lear during the plague. So there's going to be some amazing, amazing work that comes out of this forced pause. We're going to be better. We're going to be even better with this. It's really interesting how the universe sometimes provides you what you need. Now, I want to make sure I say this has been so horrible for so many people. And I never want to belittle that. And I just can't even imagine the folks who have lost loved ones, the folks who have lost their livelihoods. I can't even imagine. But I do want to say that for us, this forced pause has allowed us to really examine what we do and how we do it. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do when you're in the midst of it. When you're producing one show after another, there can be a relentlessness to it. You know, you go into rehearsal, you go into tech, you open a show, boom, you're back into rehearsal. You're back into tech, you open the show, boom, you're back into rehearsal. And there isn't a time to really step back and go, do we want to change how we're doing this? So this has really given us the opportunity to examine how we can be a more inclusive company, how we can be a more diverse company. This has given us the opportunity, how we can be a more accessible company. It's also given us the opportunity to take a look at some work-life balance issues and say, you know, yes, the show must go on, but really? Does it really have to, like, do we have to drag ourselves on if we're bleeding? You know, because that's been our, you know, since I was 15 years old, there was no way the show will never stop. We will make this happen. Now, we want to be responsible, but we also want to be a little bit, maybe take a look at, are we being reasonable? So this work-life balance and being a company that is even more diverse than where we are right now.
This may be a dumb question, but is part of the reason that Shakespeare, the Elizabethan theaters was outdoor, was in response to the plague and how people were able to gather? Or was that even a?
That's a great question. I don't fully know the answer. I know, I bet you they did find that that there was less pestilence being passed around with it being outdoors. I do know also it had to do with light because they were able to get light on the stage because of the sun. As opposed to the big fancy wealthy people were indoors with you know, flame light. The Shakespeare actors were pretty poor, so they needed the sunlight to be able to produce.
So let's talk a little bit about your book that you wrote, No Caution, Step-by-Step Guide, because it kind of leans into a place that I've always wanted to ask you. And so why not ask you in public when you can't run? But, you know, because my daughter Kelly grew up doing theater and did it at Northwestern and has gone on to do law school, which has nothing to do with theater, or maybe has everything to do with theater, I don't know. But I've often thought of how many thousands and thousands of young people are going into theater programs every single year and auditioning and hoping to get, you know, into college and then hoping to get cast in a show when they leave. You know where I'm going with this. I've often wondered, is there some moral responsibility of theater companies or theater schools to say, hey, maybe this isn't where you should be because we're leading you down a path that could just be horrific? I mean, you said that you wrote in your journal, you know, daily happiness is there more important than sporadic elation, which seems to be the mantra of theater. And I remember Kelly telling me when she did, I think it was White Christmas back in the day. And one night she was laying in bed time, she goes, you know, I'm never going to do this as a profession because I don't want to have to live like all of the other actors do. So
yeah,
it's now in your lap. Answer these questions.
Yeah. It's such a great question. I'm so glad you asked it. I want to say Kelly, your daughter, is one of the best young performers I have ever had the fortune to work with. Just as somebody who got to sit in the audience and watch her, and then somebody who got to be involved on the directing side with her as well. And there is a little bit of, because I love what I do and I love this art form so much, when there is somebody like Kelly who is so good, who chooses to not go into it, it actually, my heart breaks a little bit. But then I also get really happy and really excited for them as well. Because, you know, I want the world to see Kelly's work because she's so good. But I also am so excited that Kelly can be happy doing something else because this is so hard.
Yes.
It's really hard. And that's coming from a giant white guy who has a pretty easy path. There aren't a lot of guys out there who look like me trying to do this for a living. So if I'm telling you it's hard, imagine what it's like for a young woman. But I got to tell you, when I'm out on the road, when I started this recruiting, I would see about 5 women for every 1 guy.
Right.
Last year, before COVID, I saw 20 women for every 1 guy.
See, you're making my point.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's like, it's just brutal. Now, that being said, the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning is I know that everybody who wants to do this isn't going to get to do this. And I also know that everybody who comes to our school, who we're training, may not actually do this for their living, for their life. But what gets me out of bed in the morning is I know that because of the training they have in theater, they are going to be better at whatever they decide to do. I will argue that Kelly is going to be a better lawyer because of her theater training. I will argue that that one would be a better pharmacist because of their theater training. I've got friends who work for Goldman Sachs, who they climb the ladder, if that's what you like, if that's what you want to do, they climb that Goldman Sachs ladder way faster than some of their colleagues who just had straight business degrees, because they're just authentic humans who are comfortable having an authentic exchange with another human being. They can look somebody in the eye and actually tell them what they're feeling. They know how to collaborate. They know how to stand in front of a group of people and share what they do. So I really truly believe that anybody who trains in the theater is going to be better for it, whether they decide to do this for a living or not.
So would it be helpful then as part of the audition process, right? Someone going in and getting into a university program, the university says, here are your odds of making a living doing this, but here are all the ways you'll be able to take this training. Like, and I don't, maybe it is part of the theater programs. Do they tell the young people right up front, you know, your odds of using these skills and getting paid for it are low, but here's all the ways you'll be amazing.
You know, that would be really interesting. We do have those conversations, but they tend to be a little bit more unplanned. Somebody in my office comes in, they're worried about something. I try to open up their eyes to how many opportunities are ahead of them. We're having a what we call a brown bag lunch discussion, and a group of students, or we have an alumni come back, and that alumni opens their eyes to some different things. The thing about theater training, and something I said to myself when I was starting, is I never wanted to be the teacher who told somebody they weren't going to be able to do this, because who am I to make that call? I could tell you about students that have come through our program who I was like, this person is it. They are going to work as much as they want for as long as they want. And the person goes out and they try it for about a year, and they're like, nah, this is, I don't want to do this. Or they go out and they work a lot for 2 years, and then their type starts to change, and all of a sudden they can't get hired. And then I could tell you lots of stories about students who struggled at PCPA, who were like, they didn't do what we call take up space and let us see them. They struggled, and then they left. And about a year later, things started to sink in. They moved to Chicago, and they're working more than the rest of their class. So I you know, you always hear stories about Meryl Streep saying, telling them that she had a teacher at Yale tell her she was never going to do this. She would never work. And I'm like, I'm never going to be that guy. I just don't feel comfortable saying to somebody, I don't think you're going to do this for a living. But yeah, say that again.
I do agree with that.
Yeah.
You never want to be the dream killer. But I also am the pragmatist enough to say, let's always have a backup.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so interesting. The whole idea of having a backup plan is so interesting to me. And I can only speak from my personal experience. And I've always been grateful that I didn't have a backup, because I think I would have taken it if I did. And what not having a backup plan gave me, it taught me to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. It started making me go, well, let's see, I don't have a job as an actor, and the only other thing I'm qualified to do is deliver pizza. So I guess I'm going to start directing at the high school. I guess I'm going to see what that's like. And or I guess I'm going to open up my own theater. I guess I'm going to write a play. You know, I'm going to start writing things for the melodrama. I'm going to write a book. You know, if I had the ability to fall back on something, I think I would have. So I'm grateful for my journey that I didn't provide myself a safety net. But again, that's super easy for me to say as a giant, super privileged white guy.
I appreciate it. And super privileged white guy that we're speaking to today is Eric Stein. He's the casting director at PCPA, also the resident artist, also the recipient of Broadway World's 2020 Regional Award for Performer of the Decade for his performance in Shrek in 2016, which is starting to feel a long time ago. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And just one more reminder, if you want to check out Eric, we are doing Instagram Live, The Reluctant Therapist, to check out our behind-the-scenes look here. So in our last minutes together, Eric, let's talk a little bit about the book and why you wrote it, because no matter what kind of book it is, writing a book is like giving birth. And so what motivated you to do it, and what was your intention?
Yeah. Well, I am, as part of my job as a recruiter, so I'm a casting director and I'm the recruiter for the conservatory. I go to a lot of schools, and I was leading a lot of workshops. It was a way for me to get PCPA into the minds of some of these teachers and some students without just holding auditions at a location. I could go to the school and lead an audition workshop for a community college or for a high school or for anybody who wanted one. And, I started leading these audition workshops, and I got better at them over the years. You know, I had been doing them, started doing them in 2010, I started to really get it down to a science. I had come up with my own kind of, I don't want to say my own technique, because it was all of my teachers' information and stuff, but I came up with a kind of a checklist, a procedure that people could follow to help their students get ready for college auditions. So a lot of my focus was, how do I help the English teacher who is also the drama teacher help their student get ready for a college audition? And that was my workshop. And I found that sometimes people were trying to take notes during the workshop, or they wanted to video the workshop and things like that. And I thought, well, it'd be kind of nice if I wrote something that the teachers could take away with them. So it ended up, fascinatingly, because I did this workshop for 10 years, it wasn't that hard to write. I just kind of sat down and wrote put my workshop on paper, but I also put all of the things that I wanted to do in the workshop that I couldn't fit into a 2-hour workshop, you know? So it was like the expanded workshop that I wished I could give. And so it follows a philosophy that I have that auditions, people need to prepare for an audition the same way they prepare for opening night, because we love opening night. Mm-hmm. We, for some reason, are terrified of auditions, but we love opening night. So if we can make our auditions feel like an opening night, we're going to be thrilled to go into that room and share our work. And then I also outline a six steps that the students can go through to help them prepare their audition. And also they can use those six steps while they're standing in the hallway waiting to go into audition, just to help focus and center them and remind, what am I going to do when I get in that room? And then the second half of the book has a lot of other things like preparing for a callback, what a callback is like, preparing what's a video audition like versus a in-person audition. How do you make a resume for theater? How do you, you know, thank you notes and follow up emails and building relationships with these people. So the first half is very much about the preparing the audition itself. The second half is about how do you maintain this life early in your career.
And so how, I imagine this book is available just Googling No Caution, a step-by-step guide if you want to find it. And I'm thinking of all of the fellow theater moms that would have really benefited from having that information when their kids were young. And so moving forward for you, Eric, what are the stones unturned? I mean, there are shows that have yet to be written. I'm sure new material, as you said, post-pandemic is going to be probably astounding. But are there dream roles that you are slipping the note under the door at PCPA saying, hey, how about this?
That's a great question. You know, it's funny. I was just reading something that Judi Dench said this morning where she's in her mind's eye, she is 39 years old, a tall and willowy. And I was thinking about that as I get older, I still in my head, I still think I'm 37 with a full head of hair. So I don't always have the best eye of what I'm right for. You know, what should my dream role be right now? I don't know the answer to that, actually. Because some of the things I've wanted to do, I've grown out of, and some things that I'm more appropriate for, I never even thought I would ever be right for that. But I think that what I'm most excited about is getting to be in a resident company where I get to do a wide variety of work, where, you know, I could be doing a Shakespeare play in the spring, a big musical in the summer, and a Chekhov play in the fall. That is something that I just am so thankful for at PCPA. So getting to continue to explore variety. I'd also like to keep having directors like Brad Carroll, who know me so well that they can say, you know, Eric, the audience has seen that bit. They've seen that gimmick. We're not going to do that this time. I'm going to make you do something new. I'm going to make you not reach into your bag of tricks, but create a new bag. I'm excited about that. I'm excited to direct and to have more say in helping actors realize their dreams. And I'm hoping that that maybe I have more opportunity to write as well, write some plays.
All right. So what is a role that you did play that surprised you, you were cast? But
oh, wow. Well, the wonderful Patricia Troxell cast me as Sir Anthony Absolute in The Rivals. The Rivals is really fancy. That's like fancy. We're going to talk like we're even fancier than Shakespeare, and we're going to wear fancy wigs and speak in rhyme and rhythm. And she's asking the musical theater guy who's made his career falling down to make people laugh, to be like this really upper crust authority figure in this really heightened language shared in play. That was really unexpected and just terrifying, but also one of the most glorious things I've ever done in my career. And honestly, not that many people came to see it, but my gosh, it was incredible to get to do, to be opposite Quinn Matfield every night, who is one of the best heightened language speakers in the country. I got to be opposite Derek Whedon in Cyrano de Bergerac, where he was playing Cyrano and I was playing Ragueneau. That was like a masterclass. So, you know, I didn't go to college. So I got my bachelor's at the Melodrama and I got my master's degree being on stage with Henry Warnick's at Utah Shakespeare Festival and Derek Whedon in Cyrano de Bergerac. You know, just acting opposite these geniuses has changed my life. So Those things surprise me. I've always been the guy who is kind of goofy, can play the goofy sidekick and make people laugh and sing and dance a little bit. But when somebody says, we actually want you to speak these amazing fancy words, that always kind of catches me off guard.
It's when you remind yourself, oh, wait, I'm an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm supposed to be scared of it. You know, I mean, I shouldn't always just do what is easy. It's nice to get to do Mamma Mia. That was just glorious. It was super easy and super fun, but it's also great to do things that, like, when I played Kalegan and Three Sisters, that was way out of my comfort zone and very different.
My guest today has been Eric Stein. And Eric, I will have to do a whole nother hour because I didn't get to half my questions for you. But I hope everyone can hear why you are the gem of the Central Coast as a person and as a performer. And we miss seeing you. I miss seeing you. I just appreciate your time. And I also appreciate just the love that you emit when you talk about theater, and that there is a place for everyone, whether we're the audience or whether we're the performers, there is a place for everyone, and we miss you and we miss theater. This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can podcast our show. Follow us on Instagram. We may try this Instagram live again, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, I thank you for tuning in every Tuesday at 2, and thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
It's been grand knowing you, grand knowing you, grand being your friend. You've been kind, loyal, and so generous, right down to the end. Please don't grieve watching me leave. That would be much too painful to stand. It's been fun, now I must run, but it's been grand.